You're listening to the Kansas Blotter Audio Podcast, poetry, fiction, and nonfiction recorded in the Lawrence, Kansas, and Topeka, Kansas area.
Hi, good evening. Welcome to the Commons, which exists to support interdisciplinary inquiry across disciplines. I am Emily Ryan, coordinator for the Commons, and I'm pleased to introduce this evening's poetry reading. Our first poet, who I'm sure you're familiar with, most of you, is Megan Kaminsky. Megan is the author of Desiring Map, which was published in 2012 by Coconut Books, and seven chapbooks of poetry, most recently Wintering Prairie, which was published this year by Ducey. Her writing has appeared, or is forthcoming, in American Letters and Commentary, The Atlantic, Denver Quarterly, Puerto del Sol, and other journals. She is assistant professor of poetry writing at the University of Kansas, where she founded and directs three undergraduate creative writing projects, including the Department of English Undergraduate Reading Series, which features creative writing students reading their original poetry and prose, the Creative Writing Student Exchanges, an annual exchange between students at the University of Kansas and those in other parts of the country, and she directs the production of Siren, a national journal for undergraduate writing. Megan also curates the Taproom Poetry Series in downtown Lawrence. In her own words, she describes her work as exploring the poetics of space. She is keenly interested in eco-poetics, the pastoral, cartography, the city, women's history, and the new economy, and she sees poetry as a medium for engaging with the world through lived experience and through the study of literary history, world histories, and geography. Please welcome Megan.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for coming out. Thanks for coming out, Vivian. I'm going to read from a few pieces tonight, two long poems, and if I have time, I'll read a few newer things, which would also be an excerpt from another long poem. I'm writing a lot of long poems. I'm going to start with Wintering Prairie, which is a chapbook-length long poem which I wrote during the middle of the horrible long winter here. And I didn't realize how, I don't know. I'm not gonna say anything else. You don't really need anything else. You guys all lived through it, so yeah. Wintering Prairie. Snow drifts the prairie white, each gathering a prayer, a knife, a candle, water crystalline seeding warmth, ground expectant, bootfall above, sod below. The ground between us, the ground we share, ground that sprouts green, that holds roots deep, soft, porous, mealy with bug and vole. And this poem will be a long one. We'll widen, we'll drift like snow, like language, like dribbles, an Arctic chill. We'll stretch to Dakota fox alone in the field, to field mice buried deep. We'll follow the compass's pull magnetic north. Oil and shale beneath us, tall grass roots beneath us, bodies of fathers and mothers beneath us. The sod, the Kanza call, the warmth of snow on this day will stretch north to you and children by the fire, to pipelines and trains and fractures and bedrock, to Arctic alpine fingernail clam and morning cloak, will carry me wrapped in sound, breath encased. I do not cry, I do not tarry, I do not break on this cold day. Long shadows and sun melts spread across lawns, across asphalt. Neighborhood strip mall and shop spread west past town into farm, past county line and field. Cottonwoods on the river, switchgrass and bluestem crowd over limestone around barbed fence. Tree creek, warm goat graze in sunned patches. This afternoon, this housebreak, this reprieve from bone chill and ache, this call, this flutter. Dry leaf on the branch, light coating shadow, this grasping for mile after mile, this swallow, this sigh, this heart crush, for all that surrounds, for all that comprises and connects, hair, bone, skin made tissue from dirt, from water, from sun, from mineral. Temper this break and empty balance. Tally our remaining days. Morning toll, campanile echo, through the valley, over the frozen lake. Graying sky, barely gray, more. An absence, a want for things to come that will not. Green trash receptacle, green hose, evergreen bush, hardly green tipped in snow. The widest main street in Plains, Kansas, 20 cars empty, median treed and deep. Wheel, tread, wind, wobble, call and caw. No people today, just wind down the street. No plows scraping asphalt, concrete. No boot calls, boot tracks through field, hot caw and chimney smoke. Freeze unending, absence unbroken. Muddy boots inside the door, bricked salt brined. Another day started the same pallor. Hour indistinguishable from hour. Wood logged, field brown, grass brown, twig on branch. Minivan grayed from the week. And quiet this intercession. Lull between holiday and bookberry. Desk chair warmed, ear cocked riverward. Heavy drag of ice down the roof. Cold carry of virus and spore, lungs wrenched open, dry sputter, flock of birds out the window, cedar berries warm to taste, slow migration north, snow receding, fall of pit and berry seed and spittle, expectation for months far flung. And in absence, no flowering. Old snow piled corner high in parking lots. These same bare branches and wind howl. Clouds wall up the western sky. Snow flurry and tire screech. Contrails fading east. Whispers from north ghost this morning. My heart swallow, my back fade. Lines carry from forehead to page to prairie. Disintegrating town and county, marsh memory of coot and woodcock, gar and spadefoot and ringneck snake, black shadow across lawn, dry leaf glimmer, this memory, this place, this warble cry. I carry absence, I carry want, I carry body ache on this bright day. Motherless this morning, dry wind and daybreak slow, white tatters cast cloud on ground, on brown grass, on faces. Squirrel hop in leaf shiver, response to questions unearned, no answer, no sigh. Parcels pack into truck beds, ice melts in gutters, skin cells slough off, dust the field. Our bodies layered permeable, layered tissue softening, giving way, making room, absorptive clay and limestone, wet rot and daily decay. Snow drifted up to knee, front barricade of white, warm air seeped, turned ice, a ridge, a remainder, a crescent opening north. Eyes malnourished, too bright to bring leaf or tree or handprint into focus. Field follow and scatter, ice pellets across the ground, across town and holding syllables, gathering us close, yielding to day, to shadow, to owl call. no more winter, so it's good for us all. I don't know. So I'm going to read now from a long poem that's a part of my next project, which is tentatively entitled Deep City. And this long poem is called The Cities. It has two epigraphs, so I will start with those. I envelop the world with my thought. I mold it, I fashion it, I penetrate it, I comprehend it, or think I comprehend it, but suddenly I wake up alone and find myself in the midst of the depths of a dark light. Weakened, I forget the lights I have glimpsed. I am deprived of aid and without a heart where I can take refuge. And that's Honoré de Balzac from Louis Lambert. And the other epigraph is from Young Jeezy. I put on for my city, on for my city, and that's from The Recession. Dear cabbie, dear comfort, perhaps could you drive faster, ruefully abide your own speaking space. We'll wrangle sweet nothings through that window if you like. It's only plexiglass, my dear, plastic really that keeps us apart. Just split the avenue open, vivisect districts, flower shops, mechanics, pantries, glow orange, green, silver as we pass. Name me perception, name me economy. Rows of turnstops, lanes of traffic, halls, cubicles, queues. Order, number, and sign away my body, one department or another. Buildings formed of wire, of string. Ink-soaked walls erase each night, cobalt blue, bone white, gold leaf dissolved on tongues. I remember a murmuring of sparking or darkling, elapsing traffic ways, gloriettas entombed, plucked skull deep. We implore you, exhale city smoke and invite us within garneted sanctuary. Damp caven architectures making way. Songs and bodies rending walls porous to sound silken, soiled. Mothers dreaming northern passages, coiling silver wire, skeletal, mild beneath the unexhumed night. Sulfur traces, sully duchess cut dresses. Shape us into other sizes, other emanations. Dear neighborhood, dear block, sell your last square. I'll start over. Dear neighborhood, dear block, sell your last square inches for a tenner. It's cold today, and I'd like to go inside. Drip jewels and watch far from the crowds and dockets, garnet sweet sodalite veins. Dear city, I want to crawl inside your chest, pry rib by rib by rib, and slip soft. Extol your inner workings, colder sounds. Vowels roll, drip down thighs, conjunctions across backs, ankles, necks, secret places, old feathers, curling horns, golden chains, rags smelling of animal. I put on my city, buildings, cafes, shops, soft text keening through silence and explosion, through parts of throbbing, city built line on line, body on body, alphabet buried beneath city, concrete riverbed city, cross-sectioned, fluid, fattened. Name me modesty, name me vexation. I travel further into the night. Buildings cast shadows, neon gilds faces passing. Bejewels, crows, listing, warnings scrawled on flesh, yesterday's skin bound west. My lips spell treason, carry seeds, longing, asphalt eyes, knee deep, forgotten blocks carve brainward, backbound, debt-ridden deep city, mortgage-backed shoulder carry. Dear tourniquet, dear overbite, why not sit still for a moment and quiet too? These are places to wait inside. Nails scratching under wardrobes, long hairs in sinks, shadows, cabinets, toweled under beds. Not hotels, just places. Teeth sink into long arms, linger before touching the switch. Add another notch to the weathered chase. Leave sun for the bone man, the baker. Name me hindsight, name me plenty. If you'd let me, I'd show you. Dark spots stretching down sun, secret doors, entries to back room upon back room. I'd pick up my pencil, draw blueprints, wrangle trunks, mallets, creams made ginger mallow. You might capture the city I lost last year. Stuff its corpse with steel wool, charred tissue, mechanical entrails. Promise to bring back the remnants, rosaries of fingers and toes, button eyes, button nose. Bring me back to light. Carry me in soft palms. Brick upon brick, stack wide and deep. Consider the wall. Arms lifting, hands arranging, partitioning boulevards, brownstones, leveled losing for warm afternoons. The city stands on her toes, glissades, acquiesces, surrenders, plucks strings and plies whispers, diluted plundering fills nightly dreams from her box of misplaced letters. Dear neighbor, dear liberty, you are probably not a terrorist, severing fingers, detaching buttons, disrupting the state of the state. If you'd like to come over for cocoa, maybe I could help organize the hall closet or take over the bodega, stitch you a scarf to keep out the cold. Dear sir, I would like to cuddle you softly. Hold your brow against the crook of my neck. Name me princess or lost wages. Other voices clamor crusty in my gut swallows from a leaky diaphragm. Feathers, green, blue plumage, puncture landscapes, photos, cold viscera, sequential sequence. I've lost my Sonia and my Susie, gone market among aisles of flowers and fruits, spilt perfume, all cashmere slipped drawers, sugared bitter across the tongue. What if I split it open, melon red and ripe, let them all out? Dear night, dear misplaced images, blanketed silver, singed crystalline cold. I gather icicles, sew flak jackets, encase late night wonderings, park shadowed sharply, street lit. Dear avenue, if I follow, floor me. Carry me and my lost children, words spent, gangrened, unburied. So I'll finish up with some poems from this project that I'm working on. It's a long poem, actually, from a project I'm working on. I'm not sure what the long project is called yet, but the poem that I'm going to read, or that I'll read parts of, is called Each Acre. So. I carry layers of skin for each acre turned brown. Bag baggies of eyelash and nail, each mile consumed an awakening to sense, to eyes turned inward, to flesh kissed cold. The trees, they rustle overhead, they cover surrender each night, drought burnt leaf, summer staple, footfall soft and pale pink flower. Morning rain falling, dark summer, bones to body, body to bone. I hear drop fall, I hear each drop fall, each rivulet in lawn, shaping towards street to gutter, train call in the distance calling me back. Yellowed houses at the end of blocks, dead ended on train tracks, whistle call through summer nights. And on afternoons damp and heavy, I think of you and you, miles downstream, water sinking deep to root tips, the paws furred press into soil, soft light and long shadows across the floor, stretching the tree grove, stretching buildings on the boulevard, gray sky emptied of content. Skin lit with noon, bulldozers hum the soundtrack to days without shade, without want, for pretty things, for root sip or hill wash. I scatter us in the grass, the school in New Orleans, the boulevard downtown, the causeway, the levee. Aluminum buildings hunker down country roads, hold animal and warmth pinned at margins. I left today without calling, looking back and back. Face scarlet with salt, waxy leaf illuminated midday, soil baking beneath feet, white vinyl siding, gravel lot. No animal, no skin, no watery grave. Tractor call through the valley, brown grass on hills, flies, brown corn husk, fields that echo, fields that burn. Dark clouds heavy in the sky, the weight on shoulders, the weighted air, metalled fences disassembled, stacked on truck bed, pass forward to a new city, a new restriction. In the gray afternoon, I look for you, shadows that are not there, mothers that cry too softly, worm meat down below, my last words below, below. In the absence of us and persons, dear or not, closeted in my heart and my voice, I wait under a dull yellow sky, not still, not breathing, not carrying salt in hands. Memory takes root in damp earth, 3 days of rain, of late thunder, tendrils in soil, dendrites worm-ridden, the hive in my chest humming to open. Shadows darken and pass, trees pop up in the corner, pop past the new concrete lot, each arm pinned to side, moving sideways as if to say stop. As if to say, want won't bring you these things. The sun won't hang any longer in the sky at night. Your calls will still go unanswered. But even with these days of unending gray, of cloud blanket and too tight air, lines are painted in asphalt. People join together in halls. White petals unfold slowly, and tomatoes stay green on vines. This carry and fall, this whistle wolfward, this echo of bearfall and moose on the mountain, sung half heard unto prairie, unto field. Thank you.
Then I'm going to come back because I want to introduce our visiting writer, Joshua Clover. Josh's work as a poet, as a critic, and as an activist continues to be incredibly important to my thinking. From his poems to his critical writing on music, film, and poetry, to his essays on economic crisis, Joshua's writing is always working towards a projective future. structured by potential for growth and change, not what things are or ought to be, but what they could be. Some of you might know that Joshua was my teacher and thesis director when I was in graduate school at the University of California in Davis. I'll save us all from a long reminiscence, but I do want to acknowledge his generosity as an advisor and the central role he played in my development as a writer and as a teacher. From the first workshop I took with him, when he took me to task for a pretty horrible travel poem, to when he forced me to reconsider my aesthetic sensibilities by having me present on Leslie Scalapino's Considering How Exaggerated Music Is, which is now, by the way, one of my favorite books, he's always challenged me to think more rigorously and to be wary of easy conclusions. In this way, he is certainly a model for how I interact with my students. Thanks for coming, you guys. I'll get to the official introduction. Joshua Clover is the author of two books of poems, The Totality for Kids from the University of California Press in 2006, and Madonna Anno Domini, which was published in 1997, and which won the Walt Whitman Prize from the Academy of American Poets. He's also the author of two books of cultural criticism, focusing on music, film, and historical change. He works at the intersection of poetics and critical theory. He's also a widely published critic and journalist. Currently, he writes a column for The Nation, Pop and Circumstance. He is a professor at the University of California, Davis, and recently organized the Poetry and or Revolution Conference. Please join me in welcoming Joshua. Joshua Clover, sorry.
Hi, everyone. What a pleasure to be here and to read with Megan, especially. I think this is the first time we've ever read together. Is that a true fact?
Yeah.
It's excellent. I mean, the excellent part might already be over, but I enjoyed it very much. I'm going to read sort of, I think, I haven't really counted, four medium-length poems and one short poem, not in that order. And the first couple of poems are spring poems, sort of as the happy ending to bad Brinchers. But they're spring poems mostly set in France, where I lived for a couple of years. One of them is set in 2010, and one of them is set in 1871. I didn't live in France in 1871, but I've read books. So the first one is called Gilded Age, and the occasion for it, if there is one, aside from it being spring in France, was that several of my friends there had been accused of, I forget what the terrorism, that's the term, and so they were under kind of house arrest, and that I'd been spending some time with them, and that was sort of the occasion for this poem, Gilded Age. Working from a text, we can say that they are not allowed to travel. Working from a text, we can say this poem may be a kind of betrayal. Working from a text, we can say that they have had their tools taken away. Working from the text, we must avoid any kind of poignancy. Working in a town where there are many car dealers and fewer charms, or not working in a town because no tools. And so just having a soda, a groom, and reading from the Library of Riots, and all of this seemed to some a special effect, and to the rest of us, like life. And like life, part of it was made from texts. Against the Day, Damon One, Wonder Factory, original gangster straight out of Compton, on a generation that squandered its poets, South Asia, Je est une autre, Tranche de Mezzanine, Nina and Alberto, Total Syntax, Syntagma, Square, Queer Substance, Stance of Critique, Tikkun, The call it Thought, Thought is the Bride of What Thinking, King of the May, Maya, Aral Pragasam, Gesamtkunst, Work Day, David Harvey, V.O., Ose Josephine, Phenomenology of Spirit, Written Exam, Matisse Backward is System, Tim on the cover of The Chronicle, California Girls, Earl's Court, 24 City, EU, Eurodollar, LaRue, Rue de Pyramid, Middlesex Occupation, On the Road to Rouen, Uncertainty, NTM, MPhil, Film Socialisme, Method, The Dollar Crisis, Isidore Ducasse, Cassé du Sucre sur le Dos de Quelqu'un. That's this mysterious French expression I still don't understand. That means to break sugar on someone's back, which colloquially means to give someone shit. If anyone understands why that means that, just talk to me afterwards, because I've been puzzling over this for quite some time. Okay, sorry, back to the poem. A thing like a frag, a thing like a sin, a thing like a tag, a meant, a meta tag, and the fire in the bank. If an image disappeared, its place was immediately filled with a kind of neutral plastic material we knew as the social stuff. And a new image would appear elsewhere with a gentle whoosh, because the visible kept a careful equilibrium, except it wanted to expand. And sometimes when you woke in the morning, there would also be an unfamiliar image where an old image had been. And we didn't know if they were pasted one image on the other like an old billboard, or if the new image covered over the social stuff, or maybe it was what the stuff had become. The images were beautiful and often included clouds or words. And word clouds were themselves an allegory for the social stuff. And like all allegories, it went both ways. It was getting all over us. Working from a text, I felt guilty for working. You walk out the door and you're just like, what's up, global underclass? We knew it was time. We knew it was time to leave. We knew it was time to leave our time. Love could not help with this. And all this talk of zones of ambience is possible because you live in a quarter that is the Jewish quarter, in a neighborhood that is the gay neighborhood, on a street that is mentioned by name in the poem Zone just 98 years ago. It is the street with the lesbian bars, and this was the garment district at one point 95% of the nation's clothing made here. And now it is fashionable, as life is fashionable. And at 9:30 a.m., the people who are almost beautiful enough to never work arrive for their jobs. And it is the second day of spring, measuring not by the calendar, but the pleasure index of the air. And you think, this is close enough to be an image of your life, as you are almost beautiful. That is to say, not beautiful. And though you are professionally lazy, you will never be free of the work, and no one is transformed as the world is transformed. And finally, in the afternoon, with pheromonal halos around their bodies, the neighbors race out of their apartments to bang into each other on the corner, and I want to be honest about how much I love this. All of this. And its pleasure is my pleasure, and its wine is my wine, and I can afford it. And I'm holding this in mind as truth and measure when I say it must be annihilated. Not as text, but really now. An age which no longer loves poetry has betrayed itself. There are two kinds of poetry. No, there is only one. Jacobin and unyielding, the first principles must be beyond dispute. The best poetry will have contempt for its era, but so will the worst. It must be made from everything, including text. This is the minimum formula for realism, but it does not align itself with texts. It must align itself with work, meaning hatred of work. It must desire change so much it is accused of being in love with annihilation. It must in fact love annihilation. The rest is sophism. Called Spring Georgic. Some of you will know that a Georgic is a poem which is sort of preserves a kind of instruction. So there's Georgic for raising bees and Georgic for how to do your harvest. These were more popular in the 3rd century BC than they are presently, when we have YouTube videos mostly to resolve this issue. But nonetheless, this is called Spring Georgic. And since it ends in, it covers several years, but it ends in 1871, I wanted to dedicate it to my friend Matthew, who knows a lot about the year 1871. Listen, I have something to tell you, and it's too simple to tell it simply. So 1872, Dostoevsky publishes Bessie. 1913, Constance Garnett publishes first English translation as The Possessed. So precisely within the brackets of the Great War and the Paris Commune, human character changed. A library is more like a palace than it is like a bookstore. A bookstore is more like a hotel. A hotel is only something like a library, but a great deal like a department store, while the department store and the high palace are one. Around that time, we were leaving behind realism, and with it, the struggle over the working day. Once that catastrophe was confirmed, the fighting shifted to the front of consciousness. And then we were finally modern. In the main hall of the century, the decor was a jumble of American oiserie. I've read a lot of thick books and become convinced of only three things. Do not send your army into Afghanistan. The Hindu Kush will swallow them. No matter the circumstance, do not grant emergency powers to anyone. I promise to finish, but first an interlude on the romance of the lost manuscript. The Arcades Project and the theory of speculation were both left to languish in the National Library in France while everybody was having modernism, and then recovered in the 50s. And each book invented a new capital, one for the 19th century, one for the future of finance. Oh, those banky boys swanning through the age of arbitrage, like hookers through the dizzy atrium of the hotel future foretold. And in Sao Paulo, there is a department store without any doors at all. What thoughts I have of you tonight, Fred Jameson. We make our plans among ruins of the geopolitical Baroque. At some point, we were all working downtown in bookstores. What a luxury, like Coca-Cola for breakfast. We took turns sitting on the floor behind the back counter reading new arrivals. I remember the Andy Warhol diaries. I remember lipstick traces. I remember all those black pocketbooks from Semiotext. Now, everyone is superflux. But like credit, we are getting ahead of ourselves. Later, it would be translated as the devils or demons. The Russian word besi, actually indicating spirits which may possess a body uninvited, but are not themselves possessed. It seemed like a crude mistake had been rectified. To say it is a new era is to say it has discovered a new style of time. We do not do this in language first, but in terrain we have not chosen and do not yet understand. Language meets us there and must be cajoled into open air by dangling the old forms in their rack and wreckage. This is the poetic thought. What true act would make every word in the dictionary political? Nina says, book burning. And that seems right. And it may be that a people can be judged by how they answer this question, and this too is the poetic thought. L'autre amant, the mysterious and extreme romantic, already in 1870 dead in a hotel a few yards from where I stayed last week. His book, Chants of Maldoror, largely unknown until it was discovered in a bookstore in 1917. Hey Paris, you are beautiful, but you are terrible at keeping track of books. It had been filed in the mathematics section. And finally, this too is the poem. Like credit, the book is unable to be in the same time with itself. its meanings run ahead, while it lingers on a shelf, or its meanings come racing to catch up to the instant when the book is found in some poor agent's hand. And so we are always naming the wayward motion of things en route to realizing themselves, the fate, the itinerary, the defile, the fortune. But is there not a kernel of truth concealed within Garnett's error? If we speak, you and I, of the dispossessed, free and doubly free to haul their flesh to market, why would we not call those others within whom moves the spirit of money? Why would we not call these the possessed, green and gold in the springtime, in March and in April and in May, especially late March, seize the fucking banks. This poem is called The Transformation Problem. It's really just some notes on five poets who have been important to me. He died unable to lift himself above the shoals of everyday life. This is the sin of despair. I speak, of course, of Mayakovsky. In the 20th century, the best you could say of a person was this: the revolution betrayed him before he betrayed the revolution. Sappho, the truth is the part. You were the last love poet for a long time. It was in this period that the idea of communism was born. I like the canto where Ezra tries to fuck a rock. Pasolini loved the party from his youth. He preferred the boys with smooth cheeks. He had to leave Friulia to become the Friulian poet. I think this is a tale of heresy. In Rome, they also had boys and the party, but with a difference. No more unoccupied afternoons and many alleys. Perverts and militants learn to keep other relations to windows. Anyway, they kicked him out, and only then did he become a true communist. You will see a theme developing. We realize ourselves and die in exile. The party got older, and it began to take odd jobs and grow a beard. This beard was Stalin. In Rome, boys with jaws cool and mean enough to survive the years of lead to come. Stalin's beard ruined it for everyone. Ovid saw this simple fact early on. We are subject to invisible and impersonal forces that go to work on us. We flail in our chains. The work of the world transforms the body over and over. Things in nature seem more concrete than humans with their airy discourse. But when spirits hum in every rock and river, the situation is reversed. To undergo the metamorphosis into a tree among trees is to become more abstract and more free. This combination is lost to us now. Thus the strange illumination of Ovid's words, the transformations continue. This is a short poem called Metalepsis for Wien Hua. Metalepsis is not a word I knew when I wrote the poem, and after I'd written the poem, someone explained to me that I was talking about the category of metalepsis, which is, it's kind of what I'm doing right now. It's the things you say so as to avoid saying, actually getting to the point. So, I mean, I always had this dream that I would have to go to a conference and I would sort of stand up there and shuffle papers and say, like, well, as I've argued elsewhere, you can see where that's going. And just never actually say anything, just sort of these secondary speeches and then walk away. So this is the poem version of that. Metalepsis for Wien Hua. As I've argued elsewhere, most people are Rihanna, and the rest are Donald Sutherland. Or maybe Michael Caine, whichever one was in Alfie. I don't mean this typologically, like there are two kinds of people. There are two people in the world, and they share certain things but have never met, and we are them. All of us are them. And this is okay. In fact, I would give my left eye to be the beautiful boy who is in Alfie. But I'm not. I'm Rihanna. This is my flag of convenience when I'm walking with headphones on through the Theory District. The last poem I'm going to read is actually a poem in three parts. The parts have subtitles, so I'll sort of read them as I go. The poem overall is called The Fire Sermon. The first part is called Red Epic. Mediators, matadors, how trivial and objective this world is. Semiologists, stevedores, how objective and trivial. Equally fucked we are. Well, not equally. I have an MCM aesthetic and a radio-controlled death drive. There are two parties to every romance, the waged and the wager. And it has been getting harder to decipher the difference. A throw of the dice will never reveal the real subject. Oh, mediators, stevedores, etc. Madrid is sometimes in flames, though, confusingly, the Spanish stairs are in Rome, which is often in flames. Oakland is sometimes pleasingly in flames. Athens is almost always in flames. Also, Thessaloniki. Big data murmurs to me the likelihood that at a given profit rate in a given sector, a given household debt, a given wage deflation, a given neighborhood would be in flames. Given fire is the unfettered substance of the situation. To begin again from the beginning, to write only for one's friends. Two lovers make a zero. Two speculations make a hedge. If tender buttons had been written by capital instead of objects, food, rooms, it would have a single section called labor power. Though technical language is not conducive to enlisting popular support, if lunch poems were the poetry of the future, it would be all like, I communize this, I communize that. Transistor. There will be a revolution or there will not. If the latter, these poems were nothing but entertainments. If the former, it will succeed or fail. If the latter, these poems were better than nothing. If the former, it will feature riots, fire, and looting, and these will spread or it will not. If the latter, these poems were curiosities. If the former, it will feature riots, manifestos, barricades, and slogans, and these will leap into popular songs, or they will not. If the latter, that's that. If the former, these popular songs will be overcome, or they will not. If the latter, these poems were no different than the songs. If the former, the popular itself will be abolished via riots, barricades, manifestos, occupations, and fire, or it will not. If the latter, we'll spend several more decades talking about culture. If the former, the revolution will at this point be destroyed from within or without. If the latter, these poems went down fighting. If the former, it will feature awful confrontations with former friends, and there will be further manifestos, new slogans, ongoing occupations, and communes and lovers will be enemies. We do not know what will happen after this point, but surely this is enough to draw some preliminary conclusions. The poem must be on the side of riots, looting, barricades, occupations, manifestos, communes, slogans, fire, and enemies. This last section is called Poem Ending with a Line from Loreen Nidaker. I keep my mind under my arm, where I hold my head when I walk down to market, when I walk down to the market. The actions are social, but the mind is private. When I walk down to the inferno, the mind is private. I had a vision, the mind is privately held under my arm. When I walk, I had a dream, had a Baudelaire, had a Rambeau. The action is social, but Apollinaire walks down, he promenades down to market, promenades in the market, walks out, walks home, walks through streets named after market towns. The names are social, but the century is private. The inferno is social, but the mind follows. The head thinks we can leave, thinks we can go down to the market and leave, just leave, thinks we can be in it, but not of it. You know all too well that the best poetry is not the least revolution. You know also that poetry is the best way available to you to affirm this truth. Now we start to see how the trap is sprung, how it was sprung and all before you were born, mind under your arm, in the poetry market that exists, despite the spontaneous wailings of the poets who believe there must be no market because they cannot afford that for which they should not have to pay. The action is social, but the market exists as the secret police exists. Alas, the market will never send you to jail for your poems, though we all believed in private that we were worth jailing for the terrible sedition of our dithyrambs. Believe we deserve this honor in a no passeron toto somos pussy riot sort of way, yet the good reader, geared with cuffs and taser, cometh not for us. The world of the poem is the world. The world is abstract and real. The poem fails just when it is victorious, because one cannot live the absolute of victory over the sun until one can, and we do, and many will die when this happens. Poetry will be renewed in the blood of the negative and dreadfully much else. Thank you all very much.
You have been listening to the Kansas Blotter Audio Podcast. More information about this podcast can be found at www.kansasblotter.blogspot.com.